work for somebody.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, I tend to start everything with that.
Introduce yourself.
Montana Myers, Adventist, and I'm a child care worker.
start a meeting.
There's two moms, and I wonder if I could get one of yours.
I'm down there.
I actually
can't
hear
you.
Yes.
But the absolute book that's on the license is going to be completely done. I just got thank you. Glad that I am at the time. It's making it out of my mind. Something that we could not hear some of you. That people are aware of it. So it's obviously just a couple of people.
So, Mom, to that, we'll just tell you who's around the table then. So we have Joni Zabriskie. I almost said Johnny Anderson. Brian Zabriskie, or Johnny Anderson. Jared Lisenby, Crystal Kuipers, Holly Kingston. I'm sorry, Moss. I'm used to seeing reading people's names. Nuna Phillips, myself, Rebecca, and Wanda.
Thank you, Rebecca. I think that is not because you're being amazing.
Thank you, Mom. So, Adam, please introduce yourself.
Well, hi, I'm Adam Sorensen, VP of Donor Rewards for Ancestors, and I'm part of the Donor Channel.
And Suzanne?
Again, there are so many rules in the meeting that approved, so you will have to basically make a motion to say that whatever they say, show this to the board, not so sure about the procedure.
Okay, thank you. So the minutes were, you want to do it, Montana?
Yeah.
Montana.
So the minutes were motion by Amy, seconded by Holly Kingston.
So now I've asked whether or not there's any additions or comments. It doesn't look so. So we're just going to go ahead and all those in favor of accepting the May 12th minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Wonderful. So we'll go ahead and submit those. Great. So we're just going to go ahead and get go along with our meeting. And please, whether it's Simone or anybody, if at any time you guys can't hear, please let us know. But we're going to move right on. We're going to go on to Nuna with the Office of Child Care, some team updates.
Just really quickly, Montana, it's an
I'm Charlotte Tanner, and I was previously in child care and I'm nurturing and I'm like
before that, I worked in schools. Excited to be able to play in the
circus.
And then just a quick heads up that we're also hiring for 4 additional positions. These are all vacancies that are as a result of current staffing changes I mentioned, or vacancies that we've had for a little while. And these are all kind of in progress in different, you know, some of them are further along than others. We've got family child care specialists coming on board, a senior business analyst that we're hiring, a provider health market specialist, as well as an advocacy specialist. So no shortage of change. We like change in the office. Thank you, Barbara.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you. So the next. Oh, thank you.
Okay.
So.
I'm.
Yeah. Okay, thanks, Nuna. And so the next 2 items on our agenda will be presented by Rebecca. First, she's going to speak to us on the CRRFNARPA funding, give us an update, and then the early childhood update as well.
Great. Thank you. I want to thank everyone. I don't know whether to look in the camera or at the room. Thank everyone for being patient with us. You know, the time has come where some of the rules and requirements around the anchor location and not having an anchor location for our public meeting, our justification no longer fits, and so we are going to try to come back in person. We've seen so many benefits of having the meeting virtually with participation and people being able to join, so we're going to try a hybrid, and so it's going to, I appreciate your patience for being a little clunky today, but we're going to get there and do better. I wanted to provide an update on our COVID relief funding and let you know what activities have been happening since last time we met, where we're at, and where we see our next steps going. So the first, as you can see in the slides and projected, this is just a summary of the COVID relief funding that we received. So you can see that there were 4 different tranches, is that the right word? 4 different funding sources. The first one was the CARES Act, and that was received, that was enacted last March. We received $40 million, and you can see the obligation and liquidation deadlines as part of that. The CARES Act funding, we used that $40 million last year, and we have spent out all of that funding. The types of programs that were funded with the CARES Act money were the Utah Child Care, which served 649 children between the ages, or not ages, between the months of March and June. Excuse me. The next program was the Child Care Operations Grant. At the peak, we have 500 providers that were receiving operation grants through this funding. And we continue to still serve monthly ongoing about 450 providers with a monthly payment. These operation grants will continue until we have a new grant opportunity in place that I'll talk about in a little bit, so that funding continues. We are no longer funding it out of the CARES money. It is being funded out of another funding stream I'll talk about in just a minute. Also with CARES Act money, we did summer grants in last summer, and we served 38 programs across the state with that funding. And then also child care licensing received some grant funds to be able to, for providers to use to retrofit and to upgrade their programs so they could become they can meet the health and safety protocols required by COVID-19 guidelines. And then also covered partial fees for background checks for caregivers. Like I said, this funding has been utilized and spent. The next funding source was the CRSA Act. Just a reminder, that stands for the Coronavirus Response and Relief Supplemental Act. This funding was passed in legislation at the end of December, and then it took a few months for us to get our guidance, the federal guidance on how that funding could be spent. And so if you recall, we talked about this in this meeting, but we also invited stakeholders, I think we had about 38 stakeholders from across the child care network to come and participate in some planning meetings with us. We held about 3 meetings over the spring to talk about how the best use of these funds. Some of the things that, and then within that, we brainstormed what type of uses we want to see this funding go to. And then we prioritized those in something that was a high priority, a medium priority, and low priority. To remind this group, or for those that this is their first meeting, some of the activities or the programs that were ranked as a high priority included child care subsidies, ensuring that the subsidy support continued. Operation grants, we heard feedback that we wanted to keep those operation grants going, and also maybe expand them so that they could include others that didn't have an opportunity to receive a grant yet. We were asked to use some funding or high priority for caregiver wage support, increasing some of the wage and support for child care providers. High priority to expand infant and toddler care. Also to offset provider expenses. In that was grouped together covering background fees, fingerprints, licensing fees, etc. There was a high priority to increase Help Me Grow. To increase and expand professional development opportunities and scholarships to increase the skills of the child care network and provider network. The summer programming was ranked high. Also, some parent education campaign, trauma-informed care, TEACH funding and increasing the TEACH program, peer coaches, and then increased access to virtual and in-person home visiting services. Those were all the activities that were rated as a high priority. And our office and our team have been working to put some of that funding into place. And so we are in the process right now. Some grants have been opened, some are available, some are still in the contract process for that. But we have been able to really put funding towards most of those items. The few items that we haven't been able to provide some funding for include a parent education campaign. There was some feedback through the state plan that we do a broad marketing and outreach campaign to let parents know what resources and child care resources are available. And so we do have plans to do that, but we don't have anything in place yet. Also, with trauma-informed care training, we still need to develop some programming around that. Some of the funding is happening in some local, the local Care About Child Care agencies all presented information and a plan about how to increase and stabilize the child care systems in their local area. And those plans include some of information about education and outreach and providing that support. So it is covered in pieces, but not a statewide initiative. Any questions about that so far? So I did want to highlight a few of the grants and a few of the programs that we have awarded funding to or in the process of. The first was the child care licensing grant. Simone is going to use his time later on the agenda to talk through some of those details. But we have increased or provided funding to the Office of to Child Care Licensing to continue some of the supports that we started last year. Professional development opportunities and scholarships. Again, Heather is going to use her update to highlight specifically those programs. But we have, we're looking at just over $3 million that would go into the professional development opportunity. The operation grants, like I mentioned before, we are continuing to do those. When the CARES funding, when we ran out of the CARES funding, we did start to fund those ongoing operation grants through the PERSA money. And so that is one thing that we're using with our PERSA funding. The summer grants, we had a competitive bid, and we awarded grants to 13 providers and 40 different sites for summer programs to supplement and to increase the ability for summer programs. Those the funding for that is about $1.3 million. I mentioned that the child care, Care About Child Care, they submitted proposals for local initiatives. Some of those initiatives included outreach, looking at providing incentives for caregiver recruitment, increasing access in for the startup grant, business training courses, onboarding programs for centers, job boards, coaching, some other a substitute professional start, and other training and programming that will help with their within their area. Each area has a different approach, and so it'll be interesting to see what works really well in one area, and if something's really going well, then can we borrow that model and use it in other areas and provide funding to for that. We have some time with these funds to be able to do so. Oh, Emma, you raised your hand. Go ahead and unmute yourself.
It gives us any sense. I know you mentioned a couple of random numbers of 3 million here, 3 million there. It's really helpful to see the budget across group years.
Okay.
Help us understand how much of that additional federal funding, how much of the regular CBF funding is being put forward in a way that we can sort of like help us understand how that additional funding is being spread across the sector in different areas. And also, will there be an opportunity for us to hear about the regional efforts of Mission for Care Child Agencies, plan that we can examine or look at? I think that sounds really exciting. I would love to hear more about what's being done in different areas.
Yeah. Yeah, what if we, I can give the budget breakdown and get one that then we can update each time we meet so we can see how that's changing. And then I think that's a great idea to have some of the regional efforts, maybe in the next meeting or the next couple meetings, to highlight what they're planning on doing and what is working, and they can give an update. Would that, is that helpful?
Yeah, that sounds great. Thank you.
Great, thanks. All right. I did want to talk about the stabilization grants. And so from the chart before, if you remember, or if you have it handy, we received $261 million with the American Rescue Plan Act stabilization funds. The purpose of these funds are to stabilize the child care sector in a way that rebuilds a stronger child care system that supports the developmental learning needs of children, parents, the parents' needs and preferences, and equal access to high-quality child care. In the guidance, we received this guidance in May, and we've been looking at how to operationalize this. A few things that the guidance tells us that we are incorporating: 90% of the $261 million do need to be in subgrants for providers to apply for. And so there is a big chunk of money that will be available for providers to apply and to receive. Some of the expenses that can be used with the stabilization grant are personnel costs, including wages and benefits. It can be used for rent, utilities, and facility maintenance. For the PPE and the cleaning supplies, the needs that the increased needs since COVID. Equipment supplies, goods and services, and mental health services. In our office, we have the feedback about increasing wages for child care providers, and I've received email from different constituents around we've received feedback from a variety of community members asking us to use some of our stabilization grants to increase the wages for child care providers. So this is something that we are going to be building into the stabilization grant and allowing, really encouraging providers to use this funding to increase the wages for their staff. And so this is the avenue that we will be able to incorporate that feedback. We've also had feedback that we would like these grants to be really flexible. There are a variety of uses that these funding can be used for. And one provider may want to, or may have the need to use it for wages and benefits. Another provider may need some equipment. And so we want to be able to build this so that there is flexibility in how providers can use this money, as long as it meets the allowable uses. And then we are still working with our finance team and our contracting team and others to develop these stabilization grants. We would like to do an online application and develop an online portal. And so there is a technology piece that takes a little bit of time to be able to develop and build. But when we did the operation grant before, it was a manual process that required a lot of our staff were pulled off of other jobs to be able to really operationalize the operation grant. Not a lot of operations in one word and one sentence. And so we are trying to do something that is a little more, a little less intensive, manually intensive, but then really easy and really it's very clear in the guidance that we need to make this is easy and convenient for providers to be able to apply for and to submit documentation for their expenses. There's flexibility in how we do a formula, and so we can look at doing some different formulas, and so each provider doesn't have to submit all of their expenses to be able to verify that need. And so that's why it's taking us a little bit of time to work through some of those details. Oh, Anna, do you have your hand raised?
Can you give us a sense, Rebecca, of the amounts? I know when we were having our stakeholder meeting, there was really good, there was great feedback from different providers about how much a grant would need to be in order to provide in particular each supplement that a lot of us were especially interested in. What are the parameters for how much funding providers apply for? And has that increased at all from when the size of the stabilization grants were released last year?
Yeah, you know, I'm going to tell you, I don't know yet. That is something that we're still trying to work with our finance team about what that magic number is. I have heard from some providers that if we could take whatever someone's receiving in their operations grant right now and double it, that would help them to be able to do so. Right now with operations grants, we looked at we have a flat rate, and it was going to look like my team, they can correct me. They were doing 75% of what the operational costs were when that was calculated. And so one of the ideas that has been floated out there, and I'd love to get feedback. Oh, you're shaking your head. Sorry, someone's correcting me.
So, should I?
Yeah. Come up to mine.
Okay.
Correct me, please.
So you are correct. When the operation grant first started, it was at 75%. Then in June, as we got additional data that child care programs were covering enrollment, that amount was reduced to 60%.
Thank you.
And then when they did the flat rate, then that was reduced down a little bit more for funds for some of the tiers, but really to make it so that there were even amounts going out every month and programs didn't have to turn in that ledger.
Thank you for correcting me. You guys, the experts are here to keep me in line. But as we've been talking through and brainstorming, you know, those original calculations were built on that enrollment, like where your enrollment was versus where attendance was and what that gap was. But the purpose of these funds is to also grow and build, and so we need to, in our funding, account for being able to grow and build capacity of programs, too. I'd love to hear from this group. Is there a magic number, or what feedback would you give us as we are working through this formula and making those determinations on the grant amount?
I feel like just knowing, just kind of having feedback
is just, again, to reiterate what came up in our discussion. This doesn't provide a magical formula or a magical number, but really appreciate it. Just said the fact that I think it captured the spirit of those discussions, which was, initially, this relief of funding everybody afloat as much as possible so that when the pandemic started coming to a close, we would still have child care slots and child care providers. But now we're sort of operating with the recognition that the system for that wasn't in place and that we're going to need to substantially invest in the sector as we move forward. So I think, when you talk about doubling the amount and things like that, I think really you know, around whatever it takes, what providers need to take to reach basic wages to attract staff moving forward. Even if we don't have a plan for how to do that forever, how to stabilize and grow the field right now so that there's something worth it.
Great. Thank you. Polly has a comment. She's on your microphone, so I'll have her comment and then I'll relate.
I'll try to talk really loud. I have a cold, but to me, the thing that I noticed the most with the operations grant, the providers really appreciated it, and it was definitely what they needed, but not knowing when it was going to end or what was going to happen after that created a sense of frustration to where they was reluctant to do too much with it because they didn't know how long they were going to have it. So I appreciate that we're taking time to make sure that we understand what it's going to look like when you bring it out, but I also encourage you to read.
Yes.
Because it is very much needed.
Yes, great. So let me recap what Holly said. She said that, you know, with the operation grant, it was very beneficial and people really appreciated it. One thing that was difficult is not knowing how long it would last or when it would end. And so that inhibited some of the ability to spend or maybe plan on how to spend that funding. And so appreciates the time to talk through that, but also doesn't want us to take too much time because there's a need and we need to get this out. So that is our top priority right now with these stabilization grants and getting those up and available so that we can get them, so it can be used and providers have access to that.
So you're looking at, if you're doubling the operations grant, you're making right around $2 per employee.
Okay.
You're looking at $2 per hour for space. So that's, I mean, that seems where you're seeing flexibility because that's going to be really good for some locations and other locations that you have to choose something different, which I guess it gives that flexibility. We had a conversation about flexibility and I mean, I have different centers with the needs are very, very different. So that does give the flexibility to be able to do that, which seems optimal because you have that. So we are looking at like $2 an hour.
Okay.
We're looking at that or possibly a little bit
more. Okay. So Jody Zabriski provided a comment that if with the feedback that someone provided to double, that would be about $2 more per hour per staff. And so looking at that's a great start, but that's where they'd like to be, if not higher. Does that sound right?
Absolutely. Right. Yeah. It's and the challenge is you have centers that are really far down, and then you have centers that are possibly almost there, and so that's your challenge right there.
Yeah.
Then you might have to go up $4 more to even get competitive.
Yeah. So she's also saying that the flexibility will help in some areas, but other places that may not be enough, and so providing that flexibility. Great. Any other feedback or questions on the stabilization grant? Okay, more to come. This will be an ongoing agenda item. The last thing I want to let you know is so with the last funding source with the American Rescue Plan supplemental.
Rebecca, can I ask a really quick question about the stabilization grant?
Yeah, go ahead, Anna.
Not being a provider I don't really have a good sense of what mechanisms are in place to inform potential applicants for stabilization grants, to inform them what is going on between these movements. Like, are they getting updates about how things are looking, or are they just going to suddenly hear, okay, the stabilization grants are open, or is there... I'm not familiar enough to know like all of the things of communication between the CC and providers, but is there a way that you're regularly updating them about the, how these things are being developed and when they can expect for these changes to be made and these grants to be available?
Yeah, so I don't know if you guys all had a chance to hear Anna, but she was asking, is there a mechanism in place between these meetings and these updates for providers to get information and to know what's happening and provide feedback? And, you know, we could probably do a better job. We have those community meetings at the beginning. I know we've been in touch with some of the associations. Where we received this guidance and we're still in the planning phase, we haven't communicated anything out formally or provided a mechanism like you're asking for to share that information, but that is something that we can build into our process for sure.
I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Because, like Molly was saying, so when you're wondering when these funds are going to run out, so I mean, we're planners and budgeters.
Yes. Yep. So those feedback is that would be appreciated, especially if they're planning and budgeting. That would be helpful to know. So we will do that. So with the ARPA supplemental funds, we just received that guidance in the middle of June on how to use those funds. These funds are a little bit different in that they can be used for any activity that's allowable with our CCDF regulations, and they do not have to be tied or restricted to responding to COVID-19. So there's a little more flexibility with that funding. It can be used for the same sorts of activities that the CRRCSA funding could be used for and the ARPA stabilization grant could be used. I anticipate there is some changes that I'll talk about in my next agenda item around some work around the early childhood consolidation and some of the tasks that's coming out of the governor's early childhood commission. And so some of this ARPA funding can be used to support those strategic goals and work there. But we have not identified items right now to be used with the supplemental funding, where our priority is to get the stabilization grants out and going. This has a longer time frame to implement, and so that's how we prioritize our work. Any questions about the COVID relief? All right, I'm going to move to the next agenda item. I mentioned here about the early childhood consolidation work group, and I just wanted to provide you guys an update. So with the governor's early childhood commission, they started talking about a governance structure around early childhood and better aligning and coordinating programs and opportunities for parents that are engaging with different programs that throughout the state agencies administer. Around the same time, there was legislation passed and work that was happening with the Department of Health and the Department of Human Services that are working on, there's legislation that will combine those two departments into one Health and Human Services Department. And they are also looking at aligning those programs and all the work that happens with consolidation. The Governor's Early Childhood Commission in May tasked the steering committee of the the Department of Health and Human Services Agency Consolidation. They tasked the steering committee to include a subgroup around early childhood work, early childhood work group that would, in light of this other conversation that's happening and some of the other work that was happening with the agency consolidation, would this work group go and look at the recommendations that came out of the Early Childhood Commission and come back with recommendations on a governance structure and recommendations on how to better align and coordinate around early childhood programs. So I was asked to co-chair, along with Dr. Sarah Woolsey at the Department of Health. We co-chair this work group, and it is made up of state agency representatives. So we have, you can see on the list here, who is participating from the Utah Department of Health, Workforce Services, the Department of Human Services, and then also the Utah State Board of Education. Although they are not, Utah State Board of Education is not part of the agency consolidation, and really Workforce Services isn't part of that agency consolidation, or the work along early childhood isn't. These projects are happening simultaneously, and so that's why we have been asked to participate in the steering committee. So some of the things that have happened is that the work group has met. The Early Childhood Consolidation Work Group started meeting at the end of April, and we have been going through and providing an update on all the programs that each agency administers and doing an analysis about who the target populations are, who we partner with, what the funding source is, and we have the task to work through that. We also reviewed a lot of the recommendations that have come in various assessments, needs assessments that have happened in the community within the last few years. There was the BETA 5 needs assessment and strategic plan. there's recently a mental health needs assessment that was created that is really driving the work. And so what we have been tasked to do, I don't want to get ahead of myself on the slides. So we have been working, and we've been tasked to come back to the August Governor's Early Childhood Commission meeting with recommendations on a governance structure. And then once that is approved, then we will do the next phase of that work is to look at all of the program and look at alignment, coordination, consolidation, if that's what's necessary. So that's the next step. Many of you participate in the Early Childhood Utah Advisory Council. If you don't, the Early Childhood Utah Advisory Council has a large membership from individuals from across so many different aspects of early childhood and supporting early childhood. The work group really felt like this work, or the advisory council, was probably one of the first ways that we can engage stakeholders. And so I would encourage you guys, all of the information and stakeholder engagement and feedback will go through the formal channels for the Early Childhood Utah Advisory Council. They have a meeting tomorrow afternoon, and this is an agenda item on it. We'll be formally sharing what our draft recommendations are and providing an opportunity for individuals to write feedback on those recommendations. So I don't want to steal the thunder from tomorrow's meeting. So that's all I'll say today. I would encourage you to participate, but for the advisory group, I will also send you guys, if you can't participate in the meeting, a copy of what the draft recommendations are. These are the initial preliminary recommendations. And then also a link to the Google document that we are going to be collecting the feedback from, so you also have an opportunity to engage and provide feedback. Any questions about the work of the Early Childhood Consolidation? Anna, go ahead.
It's me again. Sorry.
Don't be sorry.
Going back to a couple of slides, you said this one right here, one of the main priorities of the Early Childhood Consolidation Work Group is to review programs being Department of Health, Department of Human Services, Department of Workforce Services, and the State Board of Education. If there's a representative from the USCE on that work group, are wonderful here in the meeting.
He's smiling. You can't see him on camera, but
But I think you were saying, can you help us understand? So I know the consolidation means Department of Health and Department of Human Services, right?
Yep.
But obviously, Department of Workforce Services and USCB are both involved. So you said, the USCB is not involved in consolidation. Are there programs that are going to be in and out of Department of Workforce Services or between USCB and these other agencies? Or how is this going to work as part of consolidation?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and we are still determining that. So with the Consolidation Steering Committee, that legislation really drives the work between health and human services. And so the work that we're doing in this work group, we're not part of that legislation, but there are early childhood programs within health and human services, and so that's why we wanted to have this conversation in this work group happen in alignment with the agency consolidation group. And so we are including the early childhood programs that were presented in the governor's early childhood commission. It listed programs that were within all four of these agencies, and USCE, Workforce Services, Health and Human Services. And so we have not decided if we haven't done the deep dive into reviewing those programs and making recommendations about, is there an opportunity right now, whatever combination that is, to consolidate, or is it just better coordination, is it just better alignment between all of the work that's happening? And so I think to answer your question is we don't know yet, but it's not the expectation as part of the agency consolidation that work is being consolidated. Does that make sense? Did I just provide a real circular answer?
No, I think it makes sense.
Okay.
Obviously, we've been talking about this commission meeting beforehand for a long time. So lot to deal with. It just, no one needs to be like sensitive to the idea that, you know, we have had ongoing conversations in a lot of different areas about the importance of maintaining child care and some of these other less formal activities as part of, you know, like really education support instead of just like the workforce support or anything. How to really be more focused on the kids and just the working parents. So I'm sure that will weigh into wherever you decide to put these different programs, but I do think that's an important thing that's been raised in these meetings and in other meetings of the early childhood commission.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that's I think once the governance structure is approved by the commission, then that's the next step, is to look at the actual program detail, and we'll come back with recommendations and have stakeholder engagement and opportunity for feedback around some of those program recommendations.
Awesome.
Any other questions? All right, that's all I have. I will turn this time over. Rhonda, move the camera.
Thank you. Perfect. So it's going to be a quick turnover, so we're just going to move right on to Joellen. I'm sure you're all ready for us, and to give us a CCQS update.
Still have at least three more scheduled in the next couple of weeks.
So we will have that going simultaneously. We will also be I think I need to talk about our reliability process. We had three of our state anchors test with ERSI for the Eckers tool in May, and they all did fabulous, and I'm so relieved it's getting easier for them. The first couple of years were brutal, like brutal for people. But it's, you know, as they've gotten used to the intensity of it, and they did a great job during the pandemic of finding ways to support the workforce out there that will do observations as well as each other in basically not losing the tool. So keeping their heads in the tool so that they would be able to provide guidance for the PLCs that we did during that time, but also the reliability process would be easier. So they immediately started training the rest of the workforce. We anticipate that we'll have all of our observers and our agencies will be reliable on the Eckers in about 3 more weeks. We've been out in program. We also extended, one thing that our Child Care Quality Systems Subcommittee recommended was that for programs, especially those that wanted observations this year, for us to give them an opportunity to receive observations during this time. So we were out in the PLC program in April, May, and June, and we also sent out an application per se, just so people could notify us, hey, I would like an observation before September. And we're working through those and scheduling those programs as well. So we will get into every program that has requested, and they will receive at least one observation. So I'm trying to get into my brain to remember what else I need to talk about. The PLCs have ended for centers and family providers. We do have one group. We did do 2 models in the center. So we have one group that's called the external model, and they're finishing up over the next month, I believe. So that was a little bit different model. That was our high quality program that were accepted into the program that are participating that way. And I didn't keep talking about the reliability. We have testing again on the ITRS tool. One of my people will be testing again, and then 2 others will be testing in August. So then we've got to quickly turn around to get the workforce trained reliability in time for high stakes observations in September. We've got it mapped out. Don't worry, we got there. I'm not worried. And then the next piece will be the FICRS testing. So in the midst of getting all the centers reboarded, getting the center back up and open for programs that haven't had the opportunity to apply or didn't apply when it was open, we also have to get things ready for family child care. So it's been a bit of a tricky situation trying to balance all of that, but we will have the FICRS testing, and then we will need to get the people that will be observers in the system next year reliable on that tool so that we can get the system open for family child care. So we know that right now all of these family child care providers that are applying in the temporary system that will get a temporary rating, like the centers that were eligible, they will have the first opportunity to apply for observation. So next year for them it will look very similar as it has worked for centers, so that they'll have the first bite of the apple. That's something Tracy Gruber used to say a lot, if you remember. So things are actually going very, very well. We've had a lot of good success despite an extremely stressful year of staff working sometimes 7 days a week. So it's kind of feeling good that we're getting back to our real life. So I don't know if anybody has any questions or comments.
There was one chat, but it's just a compliment from Anna
popping around my house getting ready to go to a meeting with real people. And I don't know if you guys noticed this, but I put on makeup for you. I got off the makeup, friends. That doesn't happen every day because I hate doing it, but I did it because I was so excited. Okay, fantastic. Thank you.
Thank you, Joellen. We're excited you're here, too, catching. So we're just going to move right on to Ann, who's going to give us the update on the state plan.
So I was asked to give an update about the state plan that was submitted July 1st, 2020 to 2024, plan for the next 2 years. It is pending approval with the Federal Office of Child Care, and there will likely still be some changes to it before it goes into effect on October 1st, and that's the process when a new plan is submitted. In response to a comment at the public hearing, we posted the draft on our website, and you can see it on the screen. On where to access that. This is a living document. They're required to make the changes to the plan that needs to be changed. Those projects we are working on this summer are clearly defined, and these are finalized, those changes will be introduced. Another comment that we received was that we need more transparent discuss amendments we are making to the state plan on a regular basis. So I was just reading in the chat. If you refresh your computer, you should be able to see it if it was posted earlier this morning. So another comment that we received, I'll just kind of start over, was to be more transparent with step amendments for making the state plan on a regular basis with the Office of Child Care Advisory Committee so that there is more awareness of changes that are being made. Many times our policy changes or administrative rules get changed when we announce those here, but we don't really tie it back to the state plan and how that's connected. So we want to be more intentional going forward when discussing updates or new projects. As mentioned, we've received many suggestions and ideas from the state planning hearing committee and other community meetings, as well as the public comment through the public hearing process. The management team has met, and we've simply reviewed each of the comments and recommendations. While it's not feasible to implement every recommendation, we did identify areas where further clarification or correction was needed in the plan to make those edits. Some recommendations we were able to make effective October 1st, we incorporated those changes off the plan. There are other recommendations that are in process, and we're still working out the details and others that we're exploring further that we'd like to implement over the next 3 years. We'll be bringing back to share with the committee. So I want to give you some high-level updates today, just to talk about some things that we've changed as a result of conversations that we've had through the public hearing feedback and this process. So this first screen here, I'll just go through this. These are some changes that we're making. We may have already made them, or we'll make them effective October 1st. So for the developmental screenings, one change that we added through Help Me Grow Utah was that they extended their hours from 5 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. to provide additional parent support to improve services to families that need support outside of regular working hours. For the TEACH program, we are using federal dollars to increase the support of TEACH and to expand capacity. Provider rates, we are increasing the input rate to the 80th percentile of the new market rates study that was recently conducted, and then we'll be increasing the budget payment rates to 70% of the average groups. That one will go into effect October 1st. We are temporarily covering the cost of licensing fees and fingerprint fees in addition to the background check fees. Monitoring reports that are posted online will include areas of compliance and non-compliance. This will support the emphasis on full compliance and help parents make informed decisions. And then under social-emotional behavioral supports, we'll be offering free online courses through Core Learning that cover social-emotional and behavioral support topic areas. Heather's actually going to go into more detail about that one. That's a change that we're planning to implement by the end of this month. And next slide. So we also have some things that are in process, and Rebecca spoke to several of these, the stabilization grant for the COVID project, when the grant program is developed, the COVID-based project continues to shape. They'll be updated as to the state plan, so we will need to make an amendment to include those new initiatives that we're working on. And we also have several Care About Child Care website enhancements. In response to suggestions, we've already added address and contact information on the main list in Care About Child Care, and added whether a provider accepts the DESMA question grid as well. We also have made the printer feature more user-friendly. We are continuing to review all of the suggestions and what to include in Care About Child Care search for care, and how to make that more useful for parents, both making sure parent resources are well connected to the Care About Child Care site and are user-friendly. As we make updates to the website, we will incorporate these to present our Rebecca also talked about the public awareness campaign. So I'll just add that our management team is meeting with the communications division to develop a messaging strategy based on feedback we received from the state plan steering committee. This will be to ensure we're communicating about the availability of subsidy program, as well as other initiatives in our office. And then on the status families, I would mention that the advocate community has asked us to look into the policy of status family access to the child care subsidy program, and pending final decisions, we will update the state plan accordingly. Next slide. And then for research and future changes, that could be, for the next 3 years, waiving the work requirements for customers during their educational activities. We're currently exploring different options as to how we might implement that and estimate what that would cost. So as we have more information on these items and that are in process and any other items that we're researching, we'll report back to you. So any questions?
There's one chat that is a compliment. Thank you, Anne, which is very helpful for me and the comment.
Great, thank you.
Does it show exactly what the percentile is? So you're talking 80%, 75%, so you can go and do the math and say, hey, this is about what we're looking at?
It does. So the question was in the state plan, does it show like what the percentiles are? The state plan asks for identifies specific age groups and provider types, so it doesn't give the amount for each. But it does give the amount for the age groups and not for the toddler and five-year-olds. But the rates will be published. We usually publish them online about 30 days before implementation. So around the end of August, early September, they'll be published online and we'll send those out to all providers so that they're aware of those changes and can plan accordingly for the coming months.
Wonderful. Thank you. So we're just going to move right on to Heather with the professional development update.
Okay. Hello. We have several. Can you go to the next slide? Yes. Thanks. I wanted to talk a little bit about the COVID-19 relief funding projects that we've been working on within the professional development team here at OCC. So as Rebecca mentioned, the high priorities related to our area were professional development scholarship opportunities, the TEACH scholarship expansion, and mentioned also some trauma-informed care. And so I wanted to go through what we've been working on developing. Just so you know, we are in process of making these available. We just got approval recently to use ARPA's funding, so we're still working with the Department of Technology Services and our communications division to update our scholarships and professional development incentive policy, applications, our marketing materials. So we're trying to get these up and running as quickly as possible, but bear with us as we're getting everything going. We're really excited about these opportunities for the field, though. So this is also, most of these are in conjunction with the Utah Registry for Professional Development.
so we're working in collaboration with them to be able to expand and add these new scholarships. So first, we're increasing our eligibility and amounts of some of our current scholarships. Our CDA scholarship is already open to all early childhood, people that work at least 15 hours in any early childhood setting. But we're also opening up other scholarships to all DWS eligible programs rather than just our licensed centers and family child care providers. And we're planning to increase some of our partial scholarships that are just covering some of the cost of things to covering the full amounts for those different credentials that we, the scholarships we already have in place. Next, we are really excited to launch an annual online training subscription membership scholarship, if you will, that we are hoping to launch at the end of the month through Forum eLearning. They offer continuing education units, or CEUs, which are all career ladder approved, and they also have all the needed training for CDA, so people could work on their all of their training hours to get their Child Development Associate credential there. It will be open, this will be open to all Utah early childhood providers, regardless of setting, as long as they create an account in the Care About Child Care website. So we're happy to host this for public preschool, Head Start, anybody working with children across the state that creates a Care About Child Care profile can participate and utilize this annual subscription. So be on the lookout. We'll be launching this near the end of this month. And then the next thing is our professional development incentive, COVID-19 relief bonus. So we have a PDI that we will continue to have the normal eligibility for, but we are adding a $250 bonus on top of each of the normal incentive amounts during this time. So anybody who earns a new career ladder level and qualifies for our eligibility to earn a PDI, professional development incentive, we'll get an additional $250 bonus for working on their education during this time. The next thing is conference registration scholarships. So this is a new scholarship. We're hoping to offer up to $500 reimbursement for people that are interested in attending early childhood conferences. It helps subsidize that cost. Next slide, thank you. These are our higher ed opportunities for COVID-19 relief funding. As Anne mentioned, we are in conjunction with the Utah Association for the Education of Young Children, or UAYC. We are expanding their contract to for this limited time using this funding to have 30 additional spots for associate degree scholarship recipients, as well as opening up a bachelor's degree model for at least 20 spots for bachelor's degrees. So that's the priority for the bachelor's degrees will go to those that have graduated from the associate program already, if they're interested. And we're also expanding eligibility for these limited time slots to allow public preschool, Head Start, and other interested parties to apply for those additional expanded spots. Additionally, we have a college degree scholarship that we are working on starting soon that will provide reimbursement for people up to $3,500 for a semester for somebody who is working towards a degree that would count on our career ladder, and they have declared that as their major. So those, that would include an early childhood degree, elementary ed degree, early childhood special ed, child development, or the equivalent of that. And they, again, our normal eligibility or expanded eligibility that we're working on is if they're working in a DWS eligible program and for at least 15 hours, then they're eligible for this scholarship as well. We're really excited about launching that and working with our institutions of higher ed and our child care programs to market that. And then the last one is a non-matriculated college course scholarship. So that would be also a reimbursement of up to $750 after completing a course. And those are for career ladder approved courses and for people that are not working towards a specific degree. And that has the same eligibility as well. So we are seriously working to get all those pieces together so that we can launch these as soon as possible so people can take advantage of them. And we are very excited to expand our opportunities for scholarships. Are there any questions?
Can you remind me what degree is offered through the TEACH program?
Through the TEACH program, Katie, I think Katie Rickard is on the call. Okay, let me.
I'm just wanting to clarify what the degree is that's available through the TEACH program.
So the TEACH program, the early childhood degree. So they focus on family and social sciences in early childhood. And it's being an associate's degree and instead of somebody that's about to be a bachelor's degree. And we always look off the child care to make sure we're very clear on the implications for both our TEACH scholarship and then their college degree scholarship. While there are similarities, there are very big differences as well.
And another question for our classes that are available to obtain your CBA. Is there an age limit on those?
On scholarship?
Are you talking about our children?
Not necessarily for those classes.
Like 15, 17 year olds.
Yeah, can 16 and 17 year olds apply to start? I know they can do the classes.
Yeah, what is the age limit that you will apply for the scholarship or find the scholarship for?
To
receive the CBA or to go to
the CBA and the scholarship?
Yeah, basically, you know how you have like the quorum and the CBA scholarship? What age can they start working towards that? Is it 18? Is it 16?
I mean, I don't determine the CBA requirements. Do you mean
like some kind of scholarship?
To get the scholarship?
They can get a CBA in high school.
Right.
However, does OCC fund for that scholarship if they're under the age of 18?
I believe it's 18 in our policy. But I can double check.
I don't know. Is that the question?
Yeah, that was the question. Okay, let me double check on their policy.
We have some schools that are asking to do partnerships, but it'd be nice.
The other thing we were looking at was to open up the eligibility for our CBA scholarship to those that are in the early childhood education, the certificate programs in high school. So that would remove the work requirement because they're not working in the CWS eligible program, so we're working on that eligibility as well. Yeah.
Can I ask a question?
Yep.
The quorum classes. So that is going to be open up to anyone who wants to participate, or is it based on application?
So Jody asked about the quorum e-learning and if that was open to everybody or there was an application. So what we're expecting is that we'll put out some information about how to sign up, but you'll go to quorum site and see if there's a registration there. It will ask, we have some questions about like where do you work and you know just to get some demographics of who is signing up, and we'll also ask for their user ID number for the Care About Child Care site so that we know that they signed up there as well, and we can track their professional development. If they're uploading their certificates there, we're going to ask that people do that. But there is no, there's no application. You just sign up and you can register, and then you have the annual subscription. So we will, we're very excited to launch that.
And can you also tell me, is learners part of the form for the PLC? Is that part of the form or is it not?
So Jody was asking if the learners courses, which are mainly related to the environment rating system or environment rating scale, were part of the form e-learning, but it's its own separate learning management system.
And are we looking at doing anything with the learners past PLC? I know it's been really beneficial. You really get like the high quality, really dicey.
We can have further conversation. We're still, we're working on some other proposals and projects as well. This is what we're, this is our first round of things, but I can speak with the quality team and we can talk through some of that.
Thank you.
Yeah. Any other questions?
Okay, thank you so much, Heather. We're going to now move up on to our agency update. We're going to start with...
Sorry, I had to mute this.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was muted. I'm talking away. So we're just going to move up on to our agency update. And we're going to start with Simone with Child Care Licensing. Yes, we can hear you.
So I just wanted to give you an update on what is child care licensing group, what has been given to us, what provided in this time, and I want to further from that with that question. So why are we subsidizing this group and that we start to subsidize and upgrading there is a big difference. So hospital there's operating costs of licensing CARES Act, so money from the CARES Act that was remaining in one of our first grants, and then this coming fiscal year we have the money from the CARES Act and ARPA funds. And why is because this is one of the approved cases for COVID-19 related funding, which is great. What is being subsidized? Every new and renewed license in residential certificate fee, which is $62. New child care application for centers, which is $100, center per child fee, $1.75 per child, depending on the number of children that the facility is applying for. And this is for new and renewal as well. Now, the background check, the European cost is in this. The background check was covered before, but now we have the European cost fee. What is not covered is any penalties, like late renewal, additional inspection, conditional temporary inspection, similar penalty fees, and another penalty that can result in a lack of compliance. So those are not subsidized, those are still quite responsible to the people. These subsidized fees became effective on June 1st, 2021, so before the end of the fiscal year, we will try to do this on the spot, and we will have to be able to implement the cost of June 1st. How do we let providers know over how this is done? There is no need to apply, so providers just get those fees paid for without being able to do anything. Maybe they need to get an obligation, they need to utilize it, they need to apply for license. They just pay for it without submitting an application or going to the website. We announced this providers by email. We sent an email to everyone. We also put it on our website and our Facebook media. And also, the licensors have been talking to providers in person because, believe it or not, some providers do not read emails. You're going to have Facebook accounts for those who have been out of contact. So we continue to help the libraries with the email and describe that you have to do this. Who is eligible for this? Every charter provider has this. And this is not just for licensed providers. This is for competitive providers, for anyone that's with this application for this part of our system. And that includes legally exempt providers and legal providers, eligible pursuits that are not licensed. What else are we doing? Because there are also, there's also a little bit of funding, not funding, but funding for this time of year. We are going to use more money for lead testing and remediation. We are also going to be working on some of the drugs for COVID-19 licensing compliance. And there is also money being used for the enhancement of our database. Our database is going to be wonderful. It is now 8 years old. Overnight, so it will complete the new investment and the technology in our system. And there are other uses of that money at the administrative level as well. Just a small piece of it with an individual that will be helping us with grants to make sure that we are giving to providers as fast as possible. You have any questions for me? How can I set up this? How long? So we're going to keep subsidizing these fees for as long as we can, as long as there is money, but these needs will be done every 6 months when we go to the charter. As long as we push for it and have money available, we're going to subsidize those fees. Any questions?
Thanks, Simone. I appreciate it. It's going to help a lot of centers. If it was just 1 month, then I would have been even more happier because then it would have helped. But that's okay. So we're going to move right on, and we're going to turn the time over to Jared.
It sounds like I'm hoping I'm assuming okay on that. So I have 4 points or 4 updates that I'd like to bring up. First off, the early learning standards, strategies, and activities have now been translated into Spanish and will be available soon on the Utah Education Network Preschool Pioneer website. This is where there's a repository for the early learning standards, which went into effect. This past year was the rollout year. They went into effect officially this past June. They are posted on the Preschool Pioneer site, as well as the translation into Spanish of the whole document. On this site, the writing committee also developed some strategies and activities, which have a lot of information and recommendations for practices that that people can use to implement the standards into their classrooms. Those are currently, the Spanish translations of those strategies and activities are currently going through the ADA compliance check. So they should be, once they're passed that, they should be up in the next week or two. The second thing, Canvas professional learning courses are available for private providers. The first one is the preschool workshop that was conducted this past January. We put the recordings for all the sessions on a Canvas course, and that was, there's been a lot of people who have signed up for credit for those. Just a heads up on that, that course will be closing on August 15th. And so if there's any staff who are currently working through the sessions and decide to go along with those to receive professional learning credit hours for that, please remind them that that will only be available for about 1 more month from now. The second Canvas professional learning courses that I'd like to talk about is the people that we had a group that put together trainings to roll out to administrators, coaches, and other trainers about the early learning standards over this past year. Over the last few months and throughout the rest of the summer, USPE collaborative crew that's working on these. We'll be updating those for providing professional learning specifically geared for teachers. Those will be on the Canvas platform, so you can access those remotely. We don't have the, you know, that's, we're continuing to work on those. When we roll them out in September, we will deliver the information about how teachers can access that to the student. Third thing is the USED preschool survey. As part of the strategic plan for the Utah State Board of Education, this is one of the first big focuses of the strategic plan is to strengthen and increase early childhood access to early childhood education. We've undertaken a pretty big task. We're trying to survey all of the preschool programs throughout the state. So this is preschool programs that are administered through LEAs, through school districts, any that might be associated with charter schools, as well as Head Start and private providers. We've had a good response so far. We actually have 85 survey responses specifically from private preschools throughout the state. But as we're trying to get as good of a picture as possible about what the current preschool climate is, we'd like to get as many responses as possible. And so we have the link in the meeting materials to that survey. Remember, just one, you know, we only need one survey per program. This will be open throughout the rest of, well, through the end of the next week. And so if any of your programs that you know of have not yet completed the survey, you can pass that on. It is a little bit intensive. You know, there's a lot of information there. I know Ron is like nodding over here. It's like, oh, yeah. There's information about enrollment. There's information about teacher training. It's like there's a wait list, what the pay rates are and hours for the teachers you know, having the program. You know, all of this will help give us a clearer picture about what you know, what the preschool programs throughout the state are currently experiencing as well as what future needs might be. So please, if you have not, if the programs have not completed that survey, please pass that on. That will be open again through the end of next week. And then we'll be providing.
Sorry, go ahead.
Finish
your statement.
We have a
question.
Okay. We'll be providing, hopefully this fall, we'll be able to provide sort of results from that survey. I guess before I move on to the next, Anna, do you have a question about this? So a lot of what we'll be doing with it in the short term will be to help inform the strategic plan and Utah State Board of Education. But we anticipate that that will be available for programs who have requests for information. We'll also, there will probably be other ways that we can distribute this information. We'll check to see if we can distribute the results from the survey on the USDE website. But as of right now, there's not a specific publication venue that we have for that. But as we've been receiving the information and receiving feedback from programs, there's definitely a need for this type of information so that we will look for ways to share and disseminate this information as much as possible. But check back with me in a couple of months, Anna, when we after the survey is closed and we've been compiling the data, and yeah, we'll look for, you know, what then would be the most appropriate for that.
I have a question on that item, 3-1.
Seems like it would be a like pretty interesting so far to get data on preschool in general in the country. And it's just understanding how exciting it's.
And then see, there's a couple of other questions and maybe.
I was wondering if those Canvas courses with the standards are kind of a stop-and-go type of thing for someone who is working in the field at the moment can start them and then one day work on them. Are they stop-and-go or no?
The question is on the Canvas courses relating to the early learning standards, whether it's something that you have to sit and do in just one sitting or if it can be a stop-and-go. Yes, you can basically work at your own pace. learner-directed timeline, so you can start, stop, pick up, you can do part of it, the whole thing, like, it's flexible. It's not led by, it's not a professional learning type of situation. It's all on the Canvas learning platform, so that it will be open to be accessed whenever and wherever.
That's like how many hours is it in its entirety, knowing that there's a deadline of 30 days.
Okay, so the question is, what's the timeline for completing the Canvas courses? There's the two different Canvas courses I mentioned. First, the preschool workshop one. This is the one that has, we have all except for one that's, only open their course up for a short amount of time. For the preschool workshop courses, they're about an hour each, and participants, people that do sign up for it, can earn up to 15 hours because there's that much content on it. Basically, they would watch the session that was recorded while it was presented live, and then there's a little activity or a little response that they have to write up for it to get the credit. And so for that type, for that, the timing of that, just figure about 1 hour per credit hour, and you can pick and choose more or less. If anybody has not signed up for that, then there is just one month left, but it's still possible. If anybody would like to continue to sign up for that, any program staff, you can have them email me, jared.lewisandlee@schools.utah.gov, and I can provide access. The next question, or the next Canvas course, the one that we'll be rolling out starting in September for the early learning standards, right now it's looking like for each of the standard content areas, there's eight areas, it will be roughly an hour to an hour and a half per content area. And once again, that can be a pick and choose thing. If somebody wants to just look at the training on the science standards or the lifelong learning practices standards, they can do that. We're hoping that it can also be used by programs if they want to use it to supplement in-person training, and they can pull some of the activities as they're doing in-person training, or it can be something that that staff can access whenever.
Thank you.
And you had a question?
Yeah, I wanted to know, the survey that was sent out, was that sent out through the computer listserv that some kind of providers were on, or did you coordinate with our office to also get it out through our listserv that might capture more types of providers?
Good question. The question was the survey, the dissemination of the survey, whether it went through the USDB preschool list or it went through OCC. I believe we just did the USDB list. I don't think we sent it out through the Office of Child Care. But that is a great idea. Can I give you that information?
Gavin and Emma, and they'll coordinate and make sure it gets in our list, and you can tell us.
Okay, great. So we'll do that to you. Thank you very much. And I'm not sure why you did that. Great idea. Any other questions about any of the points? The items so far. Okay, so the last item, we talked about this previously, in previous meetings. This past year, about mid-year, the School Readiness Board decided that it would be good to open up the USDB data gateway to any programs who would like to submit beginning of the year or end of the year data for their programs. Since it was rolled out mid-year, it was opened up for programs to submit the end of year data, but there was kind of a tight timeline, especially since it does take a little bit of time to access the system and set up access to the system to upload programs. So there were a lot of programs that said that they would wait, especially since they would only have the end of the year feed but not the beginning of the year feed. It was requested to wait until to set it up for the beginning of the year, the peak entry data that will be collected at the start of this next academic year. If you could go on to the next slide, I'm not going to read this because it's very, very tiny, but this is in the meeting information here. You can access, here's the information about how to set up access to the data gateway to upload information. And so there's still time. You know, we have about a month and a half before school starts again in the fall and the peak entry window opens. So any program who would like to participate in submitting peak data, if you would please see this document that's attached with the meeting material, the peak administrator data gateway guidance, as far as who to contact to start the process of getting designations for who's going to be the peak school administrator for the program, as well as getting teachers in the system so that they can access and upload the peak data at the start of the year. That would be great. This would be a great time for us to start that process.
There is currently no time to get that done.
Yeah, things are a bit slower during the summer, thank goodness, at USCB. Still not completely slow, but if the program initiates the process now, there should, unless something weird happens, there should be plenty of time to get the process completed in time to submit the fall.
When is the deadline for the fall?
Right. So the peak data window, I'm trying to remember exactly, there's like the 2 weeks before, 2 weeks after the start of the school year, which, if it's an ongoing program, so that you don't follow the academic calendar, that's a little bit tricky. I would suggest starting with about September 1st for that window. And then I believe the deadline, I would need to check and verify, but I believe the deadline for submitting the fall peak entry data is the end of September. I can check and verify that.
Okay. But you don't want to ever start before those 2 weeks under when you start, right?
So we start the
after Labor Day. And so if I'm looking at when we start 2 weeks in August, like when school starts typically.
Yeah, so the question is, is the starting date for the peak window for the peak entry for the fall is set up 2 weeks before or 2 weeks after the starting date. And so the question was, if we start the day after Labor Day, then theoretically you could start collecting the peak fall data in those 2 weeks before that, and then 2 weeks after. But yes, I will check to verify the deadline for submitting the peak data for the fall, but I believe it is in September. Any other questions? Okay, that is all right.
Okay. Okay, great. Thank you. So what I'd like to do now is, as we're finishing up, I just want to know from the committee if there's any other business or anything that they want to add before.
Is this an answer, if I may?
Sure, Simone.
So the legislation decided to have an anchor location in the school. There is a piece of equipment that I have a recommend called an owl, like the name of the animal, an owl. That will capture everyone in the room for the camera and the microphone. And it will be a great investment for this school.
We agree. I think that's something that we wanted to implement, and we, in the room, the equipment center we're using, that room was not, it's not wired for this room, but we love that suggestion, and I think we'll be able to implement that in our future meetings. Okay, Katie? Yes. So Katie, do you want to... I just can't...
Yes, go ahead, Katie.
Okay, sorry, you can't hear me very much. Okay. I just wanted to let people know here that the Child Care Conference 2022 is on the calendar. It's going to be March 4th and 5th. And it'll be the first date. We will have a hybrid conference. There will be a virtual component to it. And so more things about the conference will share that with right now. So it's day to day for March 4th and 5th, 2022.
Thank you. And Anna, you have your hand up.
In a bunch of our terms expire and members of the advisory committees, I'm embarrassed if I'm missed some emails or something like that. But we know that there's a lot of folks who are interested in serving in the
Yeah, Rhonda looks to me and asks if I would want to answer. Yeah. So we do need to review the terms of the membership on the committee. There was some transition earlier this year about the boards and commissions website and getting people receiving the nominations and getting those posted. So we are in receipt training, and we are in the process of reviewing all of our membership list and you know, those are appointed by our department executive director, and so we will communicate and provide an update on the memberships that have expired and then also the process to get new members to participating and how they get those appointed to the board. I would suggest to those that are listening or those that are part of this committee, if you have individuals that are interested in participating in this board, then they can submit information. They can to Montana, they can or myself, we'll get it, start collecting that information so that we can see what slots are available and where we have some positions to fill. Listening in, if you would like to make a comment, you can raise your hand And Montana will unmute your microphone so you can make your comments.
Montana, you'll get the attendee.
Okay, can you hear me?
We can, thank you.
Okay. So, can I ask a couple of questions, or is this just talking? I just have a couple of questions.
Go ahead and ask your question.
Okay. So, my first question was about the scholarship, college scholarship. Is that something that's available right now, or is that something that's just in the works for the future?
Hi, Julie. This is Heather Thomas, the Program Manager for Professional Development. We are in process of putting those together. We understand that it would be great to get those out and have the marketing materials and everything and for the fall semester, so we're doing our best to move as quickly as possible. So they're not available yet, but they've been approved for the COVID-19 funding, and we're in process of getting all of the applications and the policy and the marketing materials together to launch that new scholarship.
Okay, and so when it is available, how is that going to be available to, how will we find out about it? So is that available to, just like our employees, and then the families are also employees who are in college right now, but we need to reach out with.
Right, great. We were hoping that it would be helpful for people to, you know, attract and keep their staff because we're opening that up for all DWS eligible programs. So it'll be anybody that works at least. We have some eligibility requirements for our scholarships. The basic requirements are anybody that works in a DWS eligible program for at least 15 hours a week. So it should be open to your employees as well.
Okay, and then my other question about that is,
So it is limited funding because it's the COVID-19 funding, but we would let you know, like, if ahead of time, if it's at the end of a semester, if we weren't going to be able to offer it for the next semester. So we put $2 million towards this scholarship for the coming year. So it should be open and available to everyone for this coming semester, but we would let people know ahead of time if we ran out of funding and weren't able to offer it for the coming semester, if that makes sense. And then we will be sending out email blasts and doing other various marketing avenues to get the information out about that eligibility, who's eligible, how do you apply for this reimbursement, what degrees are part of that reimbursement. All of the details will be coming out very soon. We're just doing our best to move as quickly as possible to get all that information out.
Okay, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And then I have another comment about the stabilization grant. I think that it's amazing. I would love to be able to pay my employees more because I have lost probably 3 of the last 4 years that graduated from college, and I would have loved them to see because they were amazing, but they must have gotten closer to think that I can't meet with their wages. My concern is that how long the stabilization grant will last, because if I draw my employees up to a higher wage and it ends, then there's no way that I can sustain that.
Julie, that's a really good question. I think that's something that we have been trying to, we've been racking our brains and trying to reconcile that too. So the stabilization grant funding It is available. It has to be sent by September 30th of 2023. But all of this COVID relief funding is one-time funding. And so there is the task for our community to determine what happens after that. All these programs and all these services that we're putting into place now with one-time funds, how do we determine, or how do we make those sustainable, and what pieces of it need to be sustainable after versus what was a good one-time investment and it continues on with minimal funding after. So I don't have an answer for you, but I am open to anyone's suggestions on sustaining some of these programs, especially with the wages after the funding availability.
Okay, thank you so much.
Okay, so is there any other comments? Okay. So that looks like.
So your hand's still up. Was that from previous, or do you have another comment?
Sorry, that was previous.
Okay.
No problem.
And
then there's the chat. Katie Ricker, Teach scholarships are available right now. More info can be obtained by emailing teach@uaeyc.org.
I don't know if you guys are able to hear Montana, but she read the chat about the Teach scholarships. More information can be obtained by emailing teach@uaeyc.org.
Great. It looks like that's it. Just want to thank everybody again for their patience. Zoom and these web things offered us a lot of opportunity over COVID that we're extremely grateful for, but I, for one, don't like it. Don't do well. But I appreciate everything, and I love this hybrid. I think it's nice, and we'll work on the sound for sure for our next meeting. And if there isn't anything further, if anybody doesn't have any comment, I'm going to ask for a motion to adjourn. Okay, Jody Zabriskie, thank you very much. Motion to adjourn. We have a second? Okay, and Holly seconded. Thank you. So, fine, thanks so much. Be careful. Oh my God.
I don't know. I thought it was going to be here. It was not.
Was it words? Was it okay? First thing you thought it would be.
I think it was. Because I didn't know.